The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 10th of January, 2024. And we're all aboard for the mid show of the week. Plenty coming up between now and 12. We want you involved in that conversation as well. We've views from yesterday to carry over in today. Of course, we read them all and broadcast the majority of them. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. From outside the Republic, if you're listening in Derry, Tyrone, Cayman Islands, as we have regularly, London, wherever it might be, and you want to get involved in the conversation in your local station, it's still your local station, of course, 00353 86 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, of course, 07491 25,000, and email comments at highlandradio.com. And we've had a record-breaking week in terms of viewership numbers across all our platforms. We do appreciate that, and we'll extend that invite to you again. If you want to watch the show, if that suits you, if you're at home or whatever, you want to put it up on your big screen, see most of our guests. YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. Like and subscribe, please. It is helpful. You can watch on your smart TV. The YouTube app is normally there. You can download YouTube on your Fire Stick if it's not already there. It's really, really handy, isn't it? And you can take that on your mobile devices as well, as well as watch us on Facebook. Highland Hub, Highland Radio, News and Sport. All right, the papers this morning. We'll start with the Donegal Post today. A Donegal man facing a murder trial has been jailed for 8 months after stealing a 20-ton lorry and driving through the gates of a fish factory. Alan Vile from the drove the lorry a large distance through several towns in Donegal and faces further dangerous driving charges in relation to the incident on February 23rd, 2023. The 38-year-old with an address at Drumanoo Head, Killybegs, is in custody at Castlereagh Prison, having been charged with the murder of Robert Wilkin, whose body was found off Slieve League cliffs last September. The Inish Times reports that a probe is underway following a Buncrana fire. Several people were hospitalised following a fire at a premises in Buncrana in the early hours of Tuesday. The Donegal Fire Service and members of Angada Síochána responded to the incident at Main Street Buncrana shortly after 1 a.m. All occupants of the building were evacuated safely, a Garda spokesperson told Donegal Live, and they also clarified that they don't believe at this point that it was a malicious fire, that it started accidentally. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, St. Columba's College at Stranorlar is the first school outside Derry to host the Bloody Sunday outreach programme on Thursday 18th January. A panel consisting of Bloody Sunday Trust representatives, Lee Lavis, a former member of the British Army, member of the international community who are witnesses to or have experienced infringement of human rights, will talk to the transition year students. That's on Thursday. Okay, on to the nationals now. Were you surprised at these figures? 6 in 10 people say they've never been to a woman's women's sporting event. I have. And I'm kind of average, I think. I'm kind of average. But 6 in 10 of us have never been to a women's sporting event. More than half of Irish people have never attended a women's sporting event, new research has shown. This compares to less than 30% who've never attended a men's event. The research commissioned by Lidl and Red Sea has revealed that 59% of Irish people say they would prefer to watch men's sport on TV than attend a female sporting event. So rather than going and watch a game of live GEA with women playing, they'd prefer to sit at home and watch men playing on the telly. Of those surveyed, 46% said men's sport was generally better to watch, and 1 in 3 said they believed the standard of play was not high enough to justify attendance at live matches, which is really unfair. 1 in 3 believed the standard of play in women's sport was not high enough to justify the attendance. And this comes despite 3/4 of people saying it was a shame that more people do not attend women's fixtures. So they're saying it's a shame, but I'm not going to do it. Why do you think that is? There is this is all part of a major launch, of course, Lidl involved in it. They've commissioned the services of an American lady to try and encourage more attendance at women's games. There seemed to have been a big push on it. Do you remember we saw huge numbers at Croke Park? But I suppose those are once-offs, and you could say Katie Taylor's filled the Three Arena twice, but I suppose we're talking about day-to-day stuff. Are you surprised at those figures? What do you think needs to change to see an increase in those figures? Maybe it's just attitudes generally, not just to sports. I don't know. The Irish Times this morning, the proportion of single men among asylum seekers arriving in Ireland declined sharply in the final weeks of last year as the state ran out of capacity to offer beds to this cohort of migrants. Meanwhile, separate figures show that the number of Ukrainian refugees who sought temporary protection in Ireland in the last 2 months of 23 has almost halved compared to the same period in 2022. The data comes as the Cabinet signed off on plans to cut the welfare payments that future arrivals from Ukraine will be entitled to, with legislation due to come before the Dáil to do this as early as next week. There is significant pressure on Ireland's system for housing refugees from Ukraine and those seeking international protection from other countries. There have been local protests against planned accommodation centres for single men, most recently in Ballinrobe at County Mayo. Well, far off a point whereby I think even with the big money that's on offer, people will stop offering that accommodation because of the backlash that is there. I don't know what the relationship status is. They're called single men. They might have girlfriends at home. I don't know. But anyway, there's less of them arriving than was previously. I don't know why when I read this in the Irish Daily Mail, it was very sad with Sinead O'Connor's passing, but I kind of got some sort of comfort that she died of natural causes, if that makes sense. Sinead O'Connor died of natural causes, a London coroner announced yesterday. The singer, just 56, was found unresponsive after police were called to her flat in Herne Hill, southeast London, in July last year. Detectives did not treat the Dubliner's sudden death as suspicious, and yesterday officials ruled she had died of natural causes. A spokesperson for Southwark Coroner's Court told the Mail, "This is to confirm that Miss O'Connor died of natural causes. The coroner has therefore ceased their involvement in her death." Also, frost, ice and fog until the weekend at least on this page as well. Met Erin has extended a cold weather advisory spanning the whole of Ireland as slips, trips and falls caused by the icy conditions are putting hospital emergency departments under pressure. The National Forecaster has warned travellers and widespread of that widespread frost and ice patches are causing hazardous road conditions, and the RSA has urged motorists to slow down and watch out for vulnerable road users. But there's some uncertainty on the weather, slight increase in temperatures, but the weekend and into next week could be really chilly again as well, which is a nightmare in terms of trying to heat the house. You can almost see the oil drain out of the tank. On to the Star now this morning. New media regulator Commissioner Mann has named the 10 video sharing platforms that will be covered by its new online safety code. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Udemy, TikTok, LinkedIn, X, Pinterest, Tumblr and Reddit will be required to protect children from specific types of harmful online material. This includes cyberbullying content that promotes eating disorders and content that promotes self-harm or suicide. Platforms will also have to prevent the uploading of sharing of a range of illegal content, including incitement to hatred or violence. Under the new rules, Commissioner Mann is responsible for regulating video sharing platforms which have their EU bases in Ireland. So this is all well and good. How are they going to do it? How are they going to ensure that children don't lie about their ages? How are they going to ensure they don't use VPNs? And Snapchat's not included because Snapchat is not based in Europe. Therefore, it will be completely or continue to be completely unregulated. Well, not completely. That's unfair to say. So it all sounds good, but in reality, what difference might it make? Hopefully some. But as I say, there's always a way around these things. And the people that find them often are the young who are more familiar with the technology. But as I say, without Snapchat being involved in that, the majority of young people use Snapchat. It's equal in those that use Instagram. But TikTok. On to the sun this morning. Last year was the planet's hottest on record and likely the world's warmest in the last 100,000 years, an EU scientist body says. Scientists had widely expected the milestone after climate records were repeatedly broken in 23. Since June, every month has been the world's hottest on record. The European Union's Copernicus Ultimate Change Service Director Carlo Buntempo said yesterday, "This has been a very exceptional year climate-wise, in a league of its own, even when compared to other very warm years." CBS confirmed 2023 is the hottest year in global temperatures records, global temperature records, going back to 1850. Okay, now that doesn't mean it feels warmer for us all of the time here or whatever. It can mean we get more rain and colder summers. But globally, it was apparently the warmest potentially for 100,000 years. And the concern is, if you buy into it, is that if the temperatures keep rising, it triggers a chain of events that can no longer be stopped. Because obviously we've been through ice ages and what have you. The fear is that if, you know, the ice continues to melt and what have you, it starts a process of changing the world's atmosphere that can't be stopped by what we're doing. But that's what they say. And the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, this is not good. This is not the kind of stuff you want going out there, because everyone that comes here, not everyone, but the majority of them come through Dublin. Dublin is amongst the most unsafe major nightlife destinations in Europe, a new global study has revealed. The Irish capital made the top 10, coming in at 9th position. Three British cities landed higher than Dublin, with Birmingham being the most dangerous, and Manchester and London coming in at 5th and 8th place, respectively. Italian city Naples came in 2nd position, with French capital Paris taking 3rd spot. The Greek capital Athens was 4th, with Lyon and Brussels among 6th and 7th. The Italian city of Milan completed the top 10. But it's funny about perception, in that Brussels is deemed more unsafe than Dublin. But I would have been, I was in Brussels recently, we did a program from over there, and didn't feel, we didn't feel in any way unsafe. Or I didn't, sorry, I can only speak for myself, and walked around at night and all that kind of stuff. But it's deemed to be more dangerous than Dublin. I would actually be, because we're exposed to the fear of what Dublin is like, and normally only comes from certain quarters, but it's coming from every quarter that, you know, Dublin is incredibly unsafe. Well, I would find myself more nervous in Dublin. But statistically, Brussels, where I felt really okay, is more dangerous. It goes to show, I think, perception and the media and the information they're exposed to does form how you think. Okay, the WRC is coming to Ireland, and it's with no little thanks to a Donegal person. And we're going to be speaking to that person and so much more besides over the course of the next hour and 2 hours and 45 minutes. So stay right where you are. Back with more, including what I've just flagged, after we take this quick break.
The newspapers are courtesy of Kelly Centra Mountaintop Letterkenny, the 2022 C-Store National Off-License of the Year. The 9 till Noon Show, brought to you by Kelly's Toyota Port Road Letterkenny, stockists of a wide range of used passenger and commercial vehicles.
Last chance to enter the Donegal Silage Competition with Homeland and Nutrius Animal Feeds. Entries are closing soon, so hurry. Entry is free and includes 5 categories: dairy, beef, sheep, round bale and new entrant. First prize €300 voucher, second prize €200 voucher in each category. For full entry details, visit homeland.ie. Closing date January 19.
The McDonald's Saver Meal Deals have it all, like the classic cheeseburger Saver Meal Deal, including medium fries and a drink for just €6, or the delicious double cheeseburger meal deal, which is twice as nice for just €7. But there's more. For €6, you can get the mouth-watering mayo chicken meal deal in a delicious bun. Phew. I'm talking so fast because we all like getting our money's worth. And that's why I've only got 20 seconds to tell you about the McDonald's Saver Meal Deals. From 11 a.m, not available on delivery.
Ireland's favourite Bruce Springsteen tribute comes to the Villa Rose Hotel Bally Buffet Friday, January 19th, and Ancourt Hotel Gidor on Saturday, January 20th. Tickets available from hotel reception and online at Eventbrite. Don't miss an epic night of Springsteen magic.
Join me, Marty Friel, every Friday night from 8 for Rockin' Hits on Highland Radio, in association with Arena 7, where you can enjoy dinner and drinks in Woodbury Grill, Bar and Restaurant before bowling in Arena 7's state-of-the-art lanes. See Arena 7.ie.
Imagine Broadband's January sale is here. Grab our Hero high-speed broadband package for just £49.99 per month. Act fast. Sign up before January 31st to enjoy a massive €180 in savings. Head to imagine.ie or free phone us on 1-800-938-407 to upgrade to faster broadband faster. Subject to location and availability, minimum 18-month contract. Activation fees and annual price increase of CPI plus 3% applies. See imagine.ie for full terms and conditions.
Highland Radio time checks with Expressway. Travel Route 32 from Letterkenny to Dublin when you book online and travel for less. Expressway, bringing you the time at...
The time's 9:18 and we're joined on the programme now by Donna Kelly, Deputy CEO of CRSA and Special Advisor to the WRC. Right, now, so we're deep into a process now of trying to get the World Rally Championships back into Ireland. And how far on in this process are we, Donna, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I suppose our application to the department was lodged probably 6 months ago, but that had followed from an initial contact back from the WRC promoters in when I was at Rally Sweden last year to see what was the possibilities of getting the WRC back to Ireland. We're aware that Northern Ireland have been trying for quite some time to host an event, but unfortunately, with the lack of a stable government and obviously Stormont not sitting, they weren't successful in raising the funding. Hence, the focus shifted to see could we run a Southern Ireland event only. You know, so that's where the process started, and obviously it was embraced by MI immediately. Contact made with the government to see if we could get the required support, and so we're nearly a year into the process from the initial contact. So, but not quite there yet.
Kerry Limerick and the South East region, based out of Waterford, are now included in these proposals. How significant is that step from flagging them, so to speak?
Well, I suppose the WRC promoters, their biggest requirement is a service park area or a rally village that is sufficient in size with the required facilities to host an event of this size. I think we're fortunate in Ireland with our laws that we can close the public roads. We have stages from the north of the country right to the south, but it is the facilities you require to host an event from communication centres, media centres, medical centres, and the required hard stand for the, I suppose, the circus that follows this championship.
Now, is the last piece of the jigsaw government confirming their funding, or at that point yet?
No, not yet. No, and that's where we require, you know, all the local representatives in each of the areas to really push, because I suppose it's a little bit, the ask is a little bit different now. Each region is only looking for the funding for 1 year as opposed to three. It's a more balanced approach. So, and the return, you know, with the economics, I think really stand up. The department are doing their own assessment of those calculations, and you know, for a 5 million investment to have a return of somewhere in the region of 100 million, I think most people use the phrase no-brainer, but let's see if everybody sees the numbers in the same light.
The clock is ticking, though. The government needs to make a decision sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we really need, like, we are competing for a slot on the calendar for 2025, 2026, 2027. Like, there are other countries trying to get included on the calendar. So it's not that they're trying to fill a gap. We have really until the start of March to know where we're at, so that the 25 calendar we can get included. We're thinking that it will be somewhere in the calendar around the end of August, early September, you know, which is a good time of year for hosting the event here.
For those who maybe are interested in rallying but aren't, can you put into us context of hosting a WRC event? You know what I mean? Like, it is the equivalent, is it, of the, you know, an Irish Open or a, you know what I mean? In rallying terms, it's the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I would argue that it's probably the biggest sporting event that we would host in that year. You know, I was recently speaking to some of the people down in Adair about the Ryder Cup, and they're saying, you know, it's roughly about 60,000 spectators that will come and watch that event. And obviously, they're limited to how many people they can put onto the venue there at Adair Manor, whereas a rally of this scale takes part over such a big wide geography. They're estimating somewhere in the region of 250,000 spectators. But the logistics of hosting such an event, like for the 3 or 4 days that this event would take place, there will be a plane in the sky circling all the time, taking the images from the stages, from the helicopters, etc., relaying them and beaming them across the world to a global audience. So it's and that's only one aspect of it. The previous event is in Finland. So for all the teams to decamp, make their way to Ireland with their vast logistics, that's huge in itself. It's just, and obviously the support we require on the ground is the volunteer type support. And what we've seen over the last 10 days on the different visits to the regions, there seems to be an abundance of support locally to host these events.
I mean, we'd all have loved to have seen Donegal in the mix or somewhere in the northwest in the mix. You more than anyone, I'm sure, Donna. What would have been the blocker on that? Is it the fact that, we have to pitch what is most likely to be successful? We don't quite have the infrastructure up here yet, or why wouldn't the Northwest or Donegal have been included in a proposal or a futuring proposal for that matter?
Well, the process MI had written to the 32 clubs in the country for those to express an interest that would like to host an event. Obviously, we were looking to narrow it down to one. But my understanding is that the Donegal Motor Club hadn't met with the timeline set out for consideration. So
are you disappointed by that, or is that
here? Look, I suppose I am a proud Donegal man, and I would like everything. I'd like the centre of Ireland to be in the.
But it is, Donegal,
but it isn't. But to bring the event back to Ireland, and our community in Rallying is so small. So if we have an event of this scale back, we all benefit from it. I think, infrastructure is hugely important. And Donegal is a little bit of an outlier, as we know, to bring such a roadshow to the country. Yes, it could be done, but it's a little bit more challenging in the Northwest. That's not to say, if we can get the event back in 25 and for 3 years, our plan is that we would really showcase a world-class event and that we would retain it to the likes of a Monte Carlo rally or a Finland where they've been hosting these events for decades, and if we can, and there's no reason then that you can't have it in the Northwest in the future.
Yeah, and you made a great point too about, I think some of the return on this investment is measurable or easy to measure, some of it's not so much in terms of the global exposure, and our scenery rivals anywhere in the world. So why not use another opportunity to get that on in so many millions of eyes right across the world? So just to be clear then, because I may not phrase the question quite right a little earlier on, if the government commits to this investment, there's still a process to be gone through, but we'd be in a very firm position, a strong position. Is that how you would read it?
My view is from speaking to the promoters, and that if we secure the funding, we will be successful in bringing the event to Ireland for sure. I'm confident on that. But if we leave it too late, we obviously they have a business to run themselves. If we miss the slot, God knows when we get considered again. So we'll really push the different public representatives, etc., to get behind this, get a decision made so that we know where we're going. Because, if we look at some of the investments in the past, even to host large sporting events that haven't been successful and we've invested a lot of money, we're saying, give us the money and it's a done deal. We're not bidding for something. We will bring this event if we get the funding.
Okay, that's a pretty strong message. And as you said earlier on, the word no-brainer, the words no-brainer do seem quite obvious to this situation. We shall wait and see. We'll make our inquiries too with the department to see what their stage of consideration is at. And we look forward to speaking to you again, hopefully welcoming these additions to the calendar here.
Yeah, with hope, and certainly I have been given good support locally by the likes of Joe McHugh, etc., helping me with contacts, etc. So, there's a real will to make this happen, So hopefully we can get it across the line.
Brilliant stuff, because I'm sure there's a ton of work, and you're probably doing yourself a disservice in not mentioning it. A ton of work has gone on up until now to get us to this tipping point.
Yeah, look, it's like I say, it's possibly going to be the largest sporting event in the country in any of those years. So, yeah, it takes effort to host such an event.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks for your time. Great to chat to you. Take care of yourself. Donna Kelly there, Deputy CEO of CIRSE and a special advisor to the WRC. He was involved in this bid to bring the WRC to Ireland. And just to be clear, he is very much of the opinion that if the government commits 15 million, that's 5 million over 3 years, then we will be successful in having those three venues added to the calendar, Kerry, Limerick and the South East region. As you heard too from Donna, if we get those three over the line, who's to say we couldn't end up hosting a round of the World Rally Championship here in the Northwest? And if a guy that knows, it's him. All right, then, let's get on to some of your comments coming in. More reckless driving on our roads is exactly what we need. I, for one, don't feel my heart in my throat often enough while popping out for milk and bread. Not everyone is into rallying. These rallying promotes fast driving, and you wonder why there's so many deaths on Irish roads. I'm glad that the rally isn't coming to Donegal. I was crippled by a boy racer and suffer constant pain 18 years later, and I'm not the only one abhorred by this sport. Okay, listen, and I sympathise with your experience, and I can't really comment on that because you've gone through that experience and that is what you feel. But yeah, okay. Regarding the survey on women's sport, I come from a local GEA town, and you see the difference in boys-girls teams. They've absolutely no interest in the girls. Have seen this on numerous occasions and brought up a few issues, but got nowhere with the club. The girls are paying the same membership as the boys, but the difference in sport days out, etc., is just a disgrace indeed. And there's a quite a bit goes on at that level as well in terms of, you know, paying for travel or all this type of stuff that's quite disadvantageous to girls, some would feel. What about the solicitor charged before the courts yesterday, stealing money from clients? He was granted free legal aid, a great country. Haven't seen that case yet, but we'll look out for it. Oh, come on. Beach volleyball is the most viewed sport, bar none. Tickets only available by lottery from behind a fortified security barrier in Rio. Fact, 92,000. They set a world record for women's beach volleyball. No, I would be interested to see the demographic of the audience there. The sheep on the Flab Road in Burnfoot between... is it the Slab Road or Flab Road? It's got Flab here, but maybe it's the Slab Road. In Burnfoot between Derry and Letterkenny. Urge motorists in that area, please be careful. And a question regarding transport. Councillor Patrick McGowan arranged for transport for people going door-to-door, especially transport from Donegal to Galway. I think that the transport should be door-to-door, especially for sick and older people. I was just wondering what the update on this was. Not 100% sure there with what you're referencing in terms of what transport. But look, we'll dig into that a little bit deeper and come back to it a little later on. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by the very Reverend Liz Fitzgerald, who's rector of the grouped parishes of Raphoe, Raymochie and Clonleagh, and Dean of St. Eunan's Cathedral. Dean Liz, thank you very much for joining us. I do appreciate your time today. I wish we were speaking about something else, but we are here, unfortunately.
Yes, good morning, Greg. Yes, it is very unfortunate.
So tell us what we heard yesterday through an appeal from Angada Síochána, the damage caused to the graveyard at St. Eunan's Cathedral, which is incredibly tough for yourself, of course, and churchgoers, but particularly the families or people with loved ones in the graveyard. Can you talk us through what we've discovered?
Well, I was shocked and horrified when I received a phone call on Wednesday to tell me that there'd been damage to some of the graves in the graveyard in our beautiful St. Eunan's Cathedral in Raphoe. And originally we thought there were 5 damaged, but in fact there's a total of 8 damaged graves. Mm. And headstones have been sort of taken, uprooted, taken off the ground and off their roots, off their foundations and laid flat. And we've had 3 old ancient headstones and burial slabs broken as well. And they're sort of, if think, first of all, there's an element of disbelief. How could this happen in Rafal? Because it's a very peaceful place, a very respectful place. And people were naturally very upset and very annoyed, myself included, because St. Eunan's Cathedral is a very old church. It dates back to the 1100s, and it was built on a monastic site. So, I mean, this is deep, deep Donegal history. Mm. And, you know, in the graveyard, we have ancient burials and we have recent burials, and we have history there lying, sort of history and present lying side by side, and parents and grandparents and children all laid to rest in the shelter of the cathedral. And you do so presuming that they will be left to rest in peace. So this is just a sort of horrifying assault on that peace and tranquility.
And it's horrendous that it happened at all, but then the mind wonders as to what would motivate anyone to do this, because it's not like a couple, not that this would be acceptable, but it's not like a couple of cans were found in the grounds or something. This is, you know, really significant damage. What's the motivation? Is there any motivation? Is it mindless? Do you know, these are the kind of things start running through your head and are also troubling because, you know, could this happen again? Is someone being, not someone being targeted here, but do you know what I mean? It's just really, really uncomfortable to think about.
But that's what the guards are investigating, and they're looking at all different sort of aspects of how these things occur. And I'm not from a sort of legalistic background at all, but I have to say a huge thank you to the guards. They appeared very, very quickly on the scene. They were sensitive and professional in how they talked to myself and to the parishioners who'd gathered there at the time. And they had forensics out. So they have done, so far, they've done an absolutely great, great job. But I have to say that a lot of the hurt and the disrespect is felt by many, many people. And it's not just by our parishioners. It's the whole community.
No, I feel I've it had as well, people to be honest with you.
Do you? Well, yes,
yeah, you know,
I felt it's an invasion of our sense of what is right and what is proper. And, you know, we part with our loved ones with sadness, and we want that to be treated with respect. And it has been a place of peace over the centuries. You know, these ancient graveyards and ancient sites, and it's a place that, you know, we feel has been standing forever at the edge of the diamond in Rafal. And, you know, I hope and I pray that the peace can be restored and that this won't happen again. Mm. Some of our gravestones that have been damaged are so old we can't get a date from them, or lettering is gone. So as part of our history and heritage has been damaged, as well as those very, very personal memories for the more recent graves that have been damaged.
Yeah, and the physical damage, some of it can be undone, some of it can't. These stones have stood for so long, they will always be, they'll eternally be damaged. And then, of course, the emotional stress, can you put a time limit on its recovery?
I absolutely agree with you. That's rhetorical. I mean, you just don't know how people feel invaded in their personal grief whenever these things happen. But the ancient gravestones that may not be repaired, I mean, they will stand in perpetuity to the incident, the incident that occurred in the graveyard on Wednesday the 3rd. One thing the guards have asked for, and I'm asking lots of people for, this graveyard is visited quite often, mm-hmm. partly because of its historic significance, partly because of its very personal connect. And so if anyone had visited the graveyard between Christmas and the 3rd of January, even if they saw nothing untoward, that would be very useful in actually firming up a timeline for the guards.
Yeah, because at the moment, we know headstones were damaged between the 19th of December and January 3rd, and then there was another incident on the 3rd of January, more specifically between 12:10 p.m. That's just after midday, and 2 p.m. Any information, I think, if anything will bring any comfort, is to find those responsible to ensure this doesn't happen again, or that they are, you know, dealt with by the law. The Gardaí are investigating, but they need the public's eyes and ears as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially if they were there, say, on New Year's Day and there was nothing untoward. Those sorts of things are very, very useful. I have to say, Garda Malcolm McGee has been very thorough and very professional, and I would personally thank him for all he is doing and continues to do.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation. You might be interested in our next guest, the very Reverend Liz Fitzgerald. Thank you for your time. Seamus Breslin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. Friends of Derry City Cemetery was formed a decade ago. And was that off the back of antisocial behaviour, particularly targeting the cemetery, Seamus?
That's absolutely definite, spot on. It's nearly identical here. It just saddens me to hear what I'm hearing here. I know Rafo quite well. And 10 years ago, we had an outbreak of vandalism, 21 graves toppled over. Young children's graves, there was boot marks where they kicked the cross off and that. I mean, a guy called Trevor Temple from the Unions community, it was cross community here, and we said, look, this doesn't have to be this way. We've got to do something about it. So we formed Friends of Derry City Cemetery. We automatically looked at it and said, is this a universal thing? And it is. It might be a bit of consolation, the Rafo, but this happens everywhere, all around the world. And we looked at Edinburgh. We looked at London, we looked at Glasnevin in Dublin, and we looked at even New Zealand, America, and the research indicated that it was getting the community involved, getting the young people involved, getting all the different community groups, a holistic approach to it, highlighting the importance, the sacredness of the site, the historic nature of it, and we made a video. And we distributed it all around all the community groups, youth groups, schools, and we had the local boxer, John Doty, and he pointed on the camera and he says, if you think this is a cool thing to do, it's not, it's shameful, stop it. And with all our personalities, it's on YouTube, and we took tours around, we brought schools, community groups over, we done an anti-vandalism project with local schools, and the local Ralph Moore Centre here put the winners of the competition, shameful, stop the vandals. You want to see the artwork and the feedback we got from schools. And in the 10 years since we've been going, I would say the staff over there are telling us that antisocial behaviour and vandalism and the wrecking of the headstones has went, say, it's dropped right down out into the 1%.
So
it was absolutely shameful.
It was about education, yeah. More so than, you know, patrols and what have you.
Yeah, that's why we went and we talked Glasnevin, we talked to the people in Edinburgh and everywhere, and they said, look, you can put guard dogs, you can put people with shotguns, watchtowers, you can put everything. That will not solve the problem. What solves the problem is community involvement, education, talking about it, getting on, changing mindsets, et cetera, et cetera. And we're volunteers now, and I'm sure that out there in Rafo, and the great history and heritage of the Ulster, that Lagan Valley, I'm sure that they could replicate our project because we just replicated our project as well, and it works.
Yeah, and I'm just watching the video here that you mentioned. Heartbreak for Derry family after cemetery damage is one of the screen grabs of some local press that was put out at the time, and you're talking to camera at the moment on it, and it goes on for quite a bit, and the message seeped through then. It got through to those that needed to hear it.
Yeah, well, it didn't happen today nor yesterday, and it didn't go overnight or that. It took weeks, months, years and that, and eventually we got there.
Yeah. And, of course, you would hope it's not just...
Belfast was even worse. There used to be joyriding around their cemeteries and that, and fires and drinking and raves and all sorts of antisocial behaviour.
Yeah.
And everybody, and it seems that the community becomes involved, young people become involved, and whatever, that it gets through, and it's a global thing, so it's not, you know, people think it's really personal because it happens to them in their own, their small parochial area, but I can assure you this happens all over the world, and it's pretty similar to what happens, and the solution as involvement and everybody getting involved. And
what do you think happens, Seamus? Do you think the people, whatever age they are, but let's say maybe they could be primarily young, is it about educating them, to educate them that this is sacred ground, that this is important?
Absolutely, right. Definitely. About, that's what it is. It's about getting out and getting inside their minds and letting them know. And that the demons is just a bit of fun on its headstones and one thing and all that. But once they realise then that there's children on there and there's babies on there and there's stories on there and there's heartbreak and how much solace and comfort people get for being in these places and that, it gets through.
Yeah,
it works, but it doesn't work overnight. It's an ongoing thing. It's day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year. It gets there and it gets there and it gets there.
And obviously works. Too, what we've had an issue here as well with robberies at churches, chapels and what have you as well. Presumably, if the penny drops that this is disrespectful to do to graveyards, it might sort of help address those other issues as well. Who's to say? I'm a big fan of education and giving people the knowledge to know the difference between right and wrong. It's not always as obvious as we might think.
Yeah, that's for definite. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how it is in the rural areas, but in the urban areas, we grew up where we were taking every Sunday to visit our ancestors' graves and our people and pray for them, and we were even scared to walk on top of their graves.
Yeah, for sure, yes.
And that, I think was over the years we've lost that. And I even said to some of my older children in their 30s and all, would you like to go and visit your great grandparents? They haven't a clue where they are, but when I was growing up, I knew where they were.
Yeah, same.
Because we were there and we spotted and people told you stories and here's this person and there's that. The history of the world, I would say there must be a fantastic story. Stories all out there just crying out to be told. And you see, even if you bring even local schools and local community groups on and you say, look, let's research this person. It suddenly doesn't become a headstone, it becomes a person. It becomes a story. And especially, I always find, especially working with young people, it really impacted them when you said, you know, that's a wee baby's grave there.
Yeah.
I said, that could be your sister. That could be your mommy.
Mm.
And that, and they're going, thinking, you can see their eyes rolling, you know, and they're going, you know, thought down there. I think it works. And I'm coming from a teaching background.
Yeah, well, the proof of the pudding, you did it and it's working. And I think it's a good model that could be adopted, not just where there are problems either, Seamus, but where there could be problems.
Well, if you do it before the problems arise, then you can prevent it, can't you?
Mm.
Well, yeah, and I know that I was absolutely stunned when I heard down about there was a memorial stole down in Castle Fun recently from the graveyard and things like that. And then there was an outbreak of drinking and that they showed them, they actually had a little fire up somewhere around one of the graveyards in Lifford and that. Mm-hmm. And I was going, I mean, this is what you have to do. They're sort of like those wee secluded dark areas where people think we can get away with things.
Yeah.
And that, and you have to go, no, it's not. This is a sacred place. That's why it's so quiet and why it's people don't bother too much about it and that, because they want the people to do exactly what it says on the thing, rest and peace.
Yeah, all right, we'll leave it at that. That's a strong point. Seamus, thanks for your time. I appreciate it
greatly.
Seamus Breslin there, who helped form Friends of City Cemetery 10 years ago. It was off the back of similar activity as we've seen, not just at St. Eunan's Cathedral in Raphoe, but elsewhere as well. And it was not about necessarily patrols or what have you. It was about getting information out there, making a video, getting people who... younger people and all people can relate to, getting them to express the message, personalising it, talking about the fact that this could be your baby sister, your auntie, your mom, your granny, and they've seen it work, and it was a model that they've seen work elsewhere. So if it's going to work everywhere else, why wouldn't it work here as well? Definitely, I think, strong food for thought there. Alison, I think you're like all of us here, trying to make sense of why anyone would go in and do this type of damage to where we put our family and friends to rest.
Don't see that fella been on, all right. But, I mean, that shouldn't have to be done. What kind of people or age group is going on to do that? That they can't leave the dead alone, they can't leave the tombstones alone. I mean, what's happening?
Yeah, it's hard to get your head around. Is it possible they simply don't understand that this is sacred ground and it's so important to the community?
Greg, they must understand.
Mm.
when they're going on to do what they're doing. I mean, my goodness. Can they not find anything else to do? Or what is making them do it? Or, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And
just ridiculous.
There was a bit of a mix.
It just makes me so mad to think that you would have your mum or dad or any family member, and you would get in and their grave would be destroyed, maybe a tombstone up that can't be replaced for years and years. Mm. You know, what do you do?
There was a bit of a mix-up, and there was a short period of time whereby I thought something had been done to our parents' grave, and it was a mix-up, and nothing had been done. But
yeah.
Nothing would prepare you for how that feels, actually. You know,
you can just imagine.
Terrible. It was horrible, horrendous. It just felt like, why? And so many thoughts go through your head in such a short period of time. As I say, as it turned out, it was a misunderstanding. But I don't think, unless it's done to you, you can really understand how this feels so personal and worrying.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. I mean, I just can't get my head around it.
But we have to try education, Alison, because we can't police them all the time. So I suppose I wouldn't poo-poo Seamus's suggestion. It has worked in Derry. We probably shouldn't have to do it, but you believe
you
believe young people are losing respect, are they?
Oh, big time. Big time.
Do you see it elsewhere in life?
Respect for nothing.
Do you see
respect for nothing?
Yeah, do you see it elsewhere, or you're just talking about
this? You see it everywhere, Greg. You see it all the time. The respect for nobody, nor nothing.
Okay.
They're ridiculous. And no matter how the parents try to talk in the house to them, should they go outside and they do whatever they want to do then? And, you know, people blame parents. You don't blame them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can only advise them, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
But I just think that's the lowest.
Yeah,
that
it
they
is.
Can do.
Yeah. Again, in terms of damage to property, it doesn't get much worse. Okay, Alison, thanks for your time. I fully respect Alison's opinion and her experience. In terms of young people, it wouldn't be my experience. I find the majority of them are really quite respectful, but that's just, it can vary from person to person. It doesn't mean one person is wrong and one person is right. Okay, a caller says, even given recent terrible news, there are still people out walking on our roads across the region in dark clothes. Adults with small school children this morning at 10 past 8, no high visibility outfits on them. It's absolute madness. What else can we do? We're trying our best to use this platform not to dictate to people or to try and control people's lives, but just to try and get the very basic road safety message out there that you have to be seen for a vehicle to not hit you. They have, or they may well hit you still, but the best chance you have is if they can see you. And if you're out in the morning or at night, it doesn't matter whether it's morning darkness or nighttime darkness, you have to be wearing high vis. Even the torch on your phone is something, but it's not enough. The high vis, it pops up for the driver and you can be seen. And as I say, I know we keep going on about it, but if I didn't, I would feel guilty. So please, if you're out at night or in the morning when it's dark or dusk, please wear high vis. And the low sunshine as well is really difficult in the afternoon and the evenings. We all have to make sure that we're able to see each other as best we can. All right, stay there. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.